From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Well, a few days ago when we were reporting on the Licky Weeks story, I mentioned, hey, I wonder if they're ever going to release any UFO documents. Well, listen to this. The WikiLeaks founder has said that there were some references to UFOs in the yet-to-be-published confidential files obtained from the U.S. government. This is an incredible story. He also said that he and colleagues were aware of death threats following the publication of diplomatic cables on their website. We're going to follow up on this story, but of course, Stephen Bassett, the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, he puts on the Exopolitics Conference in Washington, D.C. annually. Steve, this could be an incredible story if these documents get released. Are you going to track them?
Oh, absolutely. This is a significant thing, George. We've been waiting for that shoe to drop in the exopolitical activist community. Are they getting UFO material? What we learned is, yes, they're getting stuff, but it's not meeting their criteria. I mean, the pipeline is filled with a lot of junk, which is not surprising. We also learn what they want, which is documents as close to the original as possible and not by the author. So he kind of said, hey, this is how you, what we need. And then, of course, he let it be known that they've actually got references in the diplomatic communiques. And so, essentially, WikiLeaks is about to go into the UFO business. It was inevitable. I was just wondering when. Now, the really big thing here, George, is this. WikiLeaks is a phenomena. This is an extraordinary thing going on here, whatever one thinks, and it's highly controversial. And when you look at WikiLeaks and you look at some of the other developments, like shows like The Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, which has absolutely astounded me into what they have been doing, where they've been going. I mean, this is serious business, this show. And other certain websites, we are seeing the early days of, I guess you could say, the first major counterinsurgency against the development of systemic secrecy and abuse of secrecy within governments. It's been long in coming, and the people are starting to marshal their forces. This is only just the beginning, I can assure you. And what WikiLeaks has done, the most important thing it's done probably is show that it can be done. So whatever happens to Julian Assange, and I assumed early on that he would either be murdered or he would be framed on some charges, there probably are a dozen others ready to take his place with similar types of websites. And so we have entered a new era here. The UFO issue, of course, I believe it's front and center of the fundamental issues regarding secrecy, the abuse of secrecy, and the secret empire, as I like to talk about it. But there are many issues, and obviously a site like that can go after all of them. So this is a huge development. Obviously, we'll be following it very closely, and I have no doubt that a lot of UFO material, as long as that site is open, is going to start coming out.
As soon as it's available, Stephen, you let us know, all right?
Absolutely.
Stephen Bassett, following the tracks of WikiLeaks, where the founder says that there is a whole bunch of UFO material, confidential files, and he's going to release them. Space Shuttle Discovery's final mission is off now until February, 3 months late because of fuel tank cracks that are stumping engineers. The longer the better, quite frankly. NASA's top spaceflight managers announced this latest delay on Friday. They said they need more time to understand the cracking, which cropped up following a failed launch attempt in early November. The Mexican army has arrested a 14-year-old boy on suspicion of being a hired killer for a drug cartel. The official said that Edgar Jimenez, nicknamed El Punches, had been trying to catch a plane to the U.S. with two of his sisters, 14 years old. The military alleges that he took part in a number of beheadings under the influence of drugs supplied by the cartel. One of the largest studies to look at health and weight finds that you don't have to be obese to raise your risk of premature death. Merely being overweight carries some risk, too. Obesity increases the risk of death from heart disease, stroke, and certain cancers. But whether being merely overweight contributing to an early death as well has been uncertain and controversial. Well, now, the latest research involving about a million and a half people, concluded that healthy adults who were overweight were 13% more likely to die during the time they were followed in the study than those whose weight is in an ideal range. Christian Wild, author and researcher, on with us now. Christian, We always suspected that being overweight would hurt you, but I didn't think just a little bit of being overweight would hurt you.
Well, this is a pretty important study. I read the article in the New England Journal this morning, and as important as the information is, George, I got to tell you, I didn't let it spoil my lunch. You know, in 2005, there was another major study by some very reputable scientists that claimed the exact opposite, and that was that being slightly on the chubby side, a little bit heavy, might actually extend your life. A lot of people are going to be wondering tonight about the BMI, that's the body mass index. They're going to be wondering how they can find out what theirs is and how it fits into this discussion that we're having tonight about body mass index and being overweight. Before we went on the air tonight, I was able to find a calculator, a BMI calculator, because it's difficult to figure out what it is, what your numbers are. And I posted it on my website. If you go there on the bottom of the site, put in three numbers, and in a nanosecond, it'll tell you where you fit in the evaluation, where you stand, and what is high, what is low, what is intermediate. George, if I could just share a brief moment with your listeners as far as the holiday season is concerned. This is important to me. It is a fact that heart attacks increase 35% in number during the December month.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing compared to August of the year? 35% increase. Now, I might have mentioned once before, but I sent out an article, a national article 2 years ago entitled Preventing Holiday Heart Attacks. Tonight, I pulled it up and put it back on the website. I hope people will read it because as families get together this year, grandparents, great-grandparents, uncles, aunts, you don't know who has cardiovascular disease. Maybe they haven't told you or maybe you're aware of it. But at any rate, it happens in the month of December during the holiday. So if you want to read the information, I'm hoping that I've got something in there that'll give you a handle on what you can do to avoid a tragedy.
All right, Christian, my friend, you're an angel from above. I'll tell you that. His website, myheartbook.com. U.S. auto safety regulators propose requiring backup cameras now on all vehicles, new vehicles, by 2014 to prevent drivers from backing up over people, a rule that may cost as much as $2.7 billion. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which published the proposed rules, said an average of 292 people die each year from backover accidents, which primarily kill children and the elderly. Sledding. Remember when you were a kid, you'd get on a sled and go sliding down a hill? If you lived in a snowy region, it's a thrill, right? But as the season storms continue to wallop the nation this month, researchers warn that the traditional wintry slide actually carries some pretty serious risks as well. Whether you're sliding and gliding on plain plastic saucers or high-tech snow tubes, children and teens on sleds now account for at least 20,820 injuries in the United States each year, according to a first-ever analysis of U.S. emergency room reports. So be careful when you take the kids out. Chinese engineers celebrating after setting a new world record for the fastest unmodified passenger train to speed. 302 miles an hour, the train reached the speed on the recently completed high-speed line linking Beijing to the coastal city of Shanghai. Used to take 10 hours to get to the two cities. With this train, it takes just 4 hours. The Twilight Zone, an American television anthology series created by Rod Serling. Each episode, 156 in the original series, is a mixture of, you know, the self-contained fantasy, sci-fi, suspense, or horror, often concluding with a very unexpected twist. In a moment, Mark Sicree joins us, along with Carol Serling, the wife of the late Rod Serling, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got a fascinating couple hours here for you before open lines. Of course, you all know Mark Sicree. More than 100 dramatic television credits to his name, including episodes of Star Trek, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5, Twilight Zone, Sliders, and beyond this. He has written 7 pilots. Additionally, Mark was a commentator for 3 years on NPR's Morning Edition. He's the author of the best-selling Twilight Zone Companion and Magic Time as well. Here he is, a dear friend of mine, Mark Sicree. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, George. Glad to be here.
Good to have you with us. And, of course, we have Carol Serling with us. First time. Carol is the widow of Rod Serling, executor of his literary estate. Carol has been a writer and editor of Twilight Zone-related books and magazines over the last three decades. We had the pleasure of bringing in their daughter, Anne Serling, a couple months ago. Here's Carol. Carol, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure. You too. How do you feel, Carol, when you hear that Twilight Zone open with Rod Serling's voice, your husband's voice? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's so often that we hear it nowadays. I mean, that music and that title, The Twilight Zone, it just means something special to people. They know exactly what's coming when they hear the music. And I know, too.
Yeah, it really does. Mark, tell us about your relationship with Carol and the Twilight Zone. I know you've been a fan of the Twilight Zone ever since I've known you.
That's right, George. Well, when I got out of college, I knew that I wanted to be a writer-producer working in television, and there were no classes in that. And I thought, well, I'm just going to study the best show ever done on television. And I was 22 years old, and I approached Carol, and we started working on the Twilight Zone Companion, and here we are. All these years later, and the book has sold over 500,000 copies. And but Carol trusted me to go through Rod's material, and she was incredibly gracious. And I'm really glad that the book succeeded, and that here we are, all these years later, still celebrating this amazing piece of work.
Well, Carol, you partnered up with a decent and honorable guy here with Mark Sicree. I've known him for years now, and I just think the world of him, Carol.
It's the Twilight Zone Bible. If somebody wants to know something about the Twilight Zone, I say, hey. You know, go get the Companion. It's all there.
That's right.
Carol, you've got to tell us, how did Rod conceive of the Twilight Zone? I mean, how did that all happen?
Well, I think part of the problem with television in the 50s and early 60s was that there were so many sacred cows and things that one couldn't say or talk about on television. They did some pretty crazy censorship of his work. So in a sense, he escaped into the Twilight Zone. And very frankly, the sponsors and the network executives, so on and so forth, they didn't really bother him. I don't think they understood what he was doing. But he was pretty free to go ahead and do and say as he wanted to. So I think that's why he did it.
His episodes, because I used to watch them, I watched them religiously, always ended with this incredible message. Was he that way in real life? Did he think that way in real life?
Well, people often ask me, was he really? This isn't what you asked me, George, but I'll tell you anyhow. he wasn't nuts. You know, he wasn't a crazy guy. He was pretty down to earth. He was
sure
afraid of sounds in the basement or walking by a cemetery as the rest of us. He felt that television really had a responsibility to not only entertain, but to hopefully educate, make a statement. And I think he found that vehicle with the Twilight Zone.
Living in L.A., when you two would go out on weekends, would you get deluged with people? I mean, did everybody chase him?
Well, most people don't know a writer, you know, and basically Rod was a writer. It was only after he started introducing the program or narrating that people began to recognize him. No, it wasn't that bad. He used to say, you know, maybe he didn't like to have his dinner interrupted, but he said, hey, you know, when they stop, I'll really worry. So he was very good about it.
He influenced the careers of so many actors. I mean, so many. Almost had Billy Mumy calling in right now. He's at an engagement. He couldn't get in at this moment. But, I mean, he really changed the careers of so many people. He had an eye for talent beyond just writing.
Well, it was great because it was an anthology show, which meant that every week there could be new people, new actors, and they would get a chance. And it was a beginning for a lot of them.
Mark, you continue to learn new things about the Twilight Zone, even after all these years, don't you?
It's true, George. I just did, as you know, I did the Blu-ray set, and I did 50 new audio commentaries, and to be able to go back to that material and watch those episodes, and this is, of course, after several decades of my being a writer-producer working in television, and so I have a very different perspective than when I wrote the book when I was in my 20s, and yet the show continues, I think, to have every bit as much validity now as when Rod wrote those phenomenal episodes, along with, of course, George Clayton Johnson and Charles Beaumont and Matheson and Earl Hamner, and But Rod wrote an astonishing amount of them. He wrote 92 out of the 156 episodes himself, and that's just a phenomenal output over five seasons.
Well, it really is. Carol, how did you meet Rod?
We were in college. We were kids in college. He was back from World War II and just starting to matriculate, and I was there on the campus. We got married after 2 years in college, finished college, and then he went on to write Continuity for a radio station. That was his first job.
Jeez, that is amazing. And we lost him way too early.
Absolutely. Way too early. Absolutely.
Tell me what life was like during that time period when it was starting to get sick.
When he was, he had a heart attack and he died, actually had a heart attack and died about a month later, with a reoccurrence of the same problem, and heart surgery was actually the cause. But there wasn't a lot of time there, George. It was pretty fast for him.
Yeah, it was. You know, and he died in 1975. And you know, geez, I wish he would have been around during this era with all the latest medical technology now, Carol. You know, God knows what they would have done. You know,
would have made a big difference. You're absolutely right,
Mark.
Fun to see what he would be doing with all the things that are happening now with that, with the WikiLeaks. I think he would have loved that.
Oh my gosh, absolutely! So when he did Night Gallery, what did he think of that show compared to The Twilight Zone?
Major difference there was that he was not did not have creative control of Night Gallery. Someone else did. Rod was producer, et cetera, of The Twilight Zone, and really did have the creative say about everything. Not so with a Night Gallery. He was not happy with that program. There were some shows that weren't bad, but there were some that were pretty appalling.
I bet he came home sometimes or watched these shows on television and just shook his head, didn't he?
How'd you know?
Little remote viewing here. Mark, how did your interest in The Twilight Zone start, Mark Zucker?
Well, I grew up watching the show. When I was a kid, it actually was in syndication, and it would air in the afternoons, and I would come home from school and watch it on KTLA, and it ran 5 days a week, and so I was just able to inhale it, and it was an amazing show, and in fact, the kids at school, it was sort of our shared mythology, so we'd talk about these episodes and just be blown away by them, and, you know, they were really phenomenal. I mean, one of the things that's spectacular about Twilight Zone and still speaks to what an amazing show it is that it can speak to children, it can speak to adults. It really has a commonality of storytelling and the high quality of how it's produced and acted and all across the board. I think it really speaks to people from all cultures, all generations, and when I speak to young people now, and the fact that they're every bit as impressed with it now as when I was a kid. So I think that's the mark of a true classic.
Carol, did Rod always have this kind of surreal creativity? I mean, you had to be different to write the way he wrote.
Marvelous imagination, really. You know, he would see, for instance, somebody across the room that looked like a little bit like him. Now, he would develop an entire story around that. There was one. The rest of us, we'd say, oh, that's funny. He looks like me, you know. No, it was his imagination. It was just fabulous.
We'll be back in a moment. We'll talk with Carol Serling and Mark Zucker. We'll take a few phone calls, too. Hold on. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're talking this hour with Carol Serling, the wife of the late Rod Serling, developer of The Twilight Zone, and Mark Zucker. Next hour, Mark will stick around as we talk about some sci-fi related projects. We're also going to take some of your phone calls in a moment with Mark and Carol in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Carol Serling, Mark Zucker. Carol, you know the old saying, behind every successful man, how many of these Twilight Zone episodes did you write? Come on, tell me.
I was a pretty harsh critic of what he did write, but I can't take credit for that. I did not do the writing.
Did he use you as a sounding board very often?
Absolutely. He worked at home. His office was in the backyard, and not outside.
Mark told us once in the pool with a dictaphone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I mean, it takes a very clever guy to be able to do that and compose scripts like that and then just have them all typed up. And I guess there were some other scripts that just never made it to the screen, right?
You mean on Twilight Zone or?
Yeah, Twilight Zone or anything else he was writing?
Not a lot. Not a lot. The Twilight Zone, it was a labor of love. And, you know, those stories were really little vignettes. They were short. And he did them very quickly and very well, and particularly in the beginning. You know, it was good for him. On some of the other programs that he wrote, the dramatic programs for Playhouse 90 and Hallmark and so on and so forth, those took much longer. But these little Twilight Zones came quickly for him.
Carol, he had an incredible influence on my life. I used to watch these shows religiously. And the messages that I always got as a young boy at the time just played an important part in developing me. I mean, I remember the ones, for example, when the neighborhood thought there was going to be an atomic bomb and they wanted into his bomb shelter, the little girl who fell into another dimension. All those episodes shaped me politically and just really the way I look at life. I mean, it was truly remarkable with what he has done.
George, I appreciate your saying that. I really do.
I had the opportunity. Mark brought Ray Bradbury on for a bit, and Ray, of course, wrote I Sing the Body Electric, again, one of the classics for Rod's Twilight Zone. And I wrote an editorial in our magazine about that, and Ray sent me a very nice letter as well. So Rod influenced a lot of young writers in Hollywood who Mark Zachary, I assume, are still out in Hollywood now doing what they do, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Exactly. It's you know, it's the same game here in Hollywood as always.
Will we ever see Mark Zachary another Twilight Zone type show, or is that it?
Well, you know, it's funny, George. There's a ripple effect from Twilight Zone. It's you know, it's you're not going to see exactly the same as Twilight Zone. When people try and do anthology shows, if they're trying to imitate Twilight Zone, it's often like a little a carbon copy that doesn't work as well. But
right.
The influence of Rod, how he created Twilight Zone, you know, you see that in J.J. Abrams' work. You see it in Matt Weiner on Mad Men. You see it throughout television. I don't think there's a single dramatic show on television of quality that doesn't really bear Rod Serling's mark in one way or another.
Carol, what are you doing now these days?
Well, you know, it's amazing to me. I thought, you know, every year I say, well, that'll be the end of it. I'm managing literary assets of his, but there won't be any more, you know. And then every year something starts up again. Somebody wants to. We have three books out this year, within the past year. One of them, As Timeless as Infinity, is a book that anyone who's really interested in Twilight Zone should get. Actually, it's going to be a series of 10, but it will have all of Rod's scripts and photographs and interviews and so on and so forth. And it's a marvelous book. And another one that I worked on this year as an editor was More Stories from the Twilight Zone. And those are new stories, top writers in the field, stories of speculative fiction. And there's a story of Rod's in there and a story of Rod's brother, written by Rod's brother. And they're all Twilight Zone type stories, and they're really great. So it keeps me busy, George.
It sure does. What do you think Rod would say about the internet today, about television today, Carol?
You're putting me on the spot. I don't know what he'd say about television today. I don't think, I mean, there are good things on, but I think he'd be disappointed. He really felt that television should be an art form, and I don't think we can say it's that today.
In his day, he was tough, wasn't he, in Hollywood? I mean, he didn't like the television executives telling him what to write, what to do. He was tough with sponsors. He put his foot down and delivered on the way he felt things should be, wasn't he?
Absolutely. absolutely. And that's why, as I said before, the Twilight Zone was kind of a relief for him, I think, because he was able to say what he wanted to and confront the issues, and he was pretty much left alone. But no, they used to call him the angry young man because he wanted to see television become something. And so he worked in that vineyard. He labored there.
When the series ended, how did he feel? Was he relieved? Was he disappointed?
I think he would have preferred to say, I quit. But he was relieved. The first 3 years of the series, The Twilight Zone, were the best. I'm sure Mark would agree with that.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, I'm beginning to meet myself coming around the corner. You know, I think he'd had it. He wanted to move on and do something different, which he did.
It was pretty intense. Mark, in those days, new episodes for a year, how many did they do?
Well, it depended on the season, but at the height, it was 39 episodes, which is amazing. Because when you look at nowadays on a show like Mad Men, they're doing 13, or The Walking Dead this year was 8. And so it was a very different game back then, but they were able to maintain the quality. And, you know, it's funny when Carol mentioned that the first three seasons of Twilight Zone were the top three seasons. I agree, but still, even the fifth and final season, there were some amazing episodes. Nightmare 20,000 Feet, Living Doll, the Talkie Teen episode was fifth season. The In Praise of Pip, which is a great Serling script with Jack Klugman and Billy Mumy, that was fifth season. So there were still some episodes in the final season of Twilight Zone that any series would have viewed as one of their crown jewels.
And I've got to tell you, there's still something about black and white compared to color television that just has that difference. Carol, did he ever talk about that?
Well, you know, they tried. They did colorize one or two of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
And it really didn't work. I mean, I think that the black and white, they're really art form, you know. They were gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yes.
It does not work to make them into color. In spite of the fact that you do find kids today who say, I won't watch that because it's not in color.
Let's take some calls. We'll go to first-time caller Mary Jo in Las Vegas, Nevada. Go ahead, Mary Jo. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. That episode was first and foremost in my mind, and I remember back. It wasn't scary, no creatures, no monsters, but it was so compelling. And it won the 1962 Cannes Film Festival, and it also won an Oscar.
Yeah, that's right. And that, interestingly enough, that was the only episode of The Twilight Zone that was not made by The Twilight Zone crew. Basically, that season, that was season 5, and producer William Frug was trying to figure out how to get the show back under budget. It was running over budget, and he saw Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, and it was actually made by a French company, but the dialogue is in English because it's based on a short story by Ambrose Bierce set in the American Civil War. And so he acquired it, and Rod shot an opening introduction and a closing narration, and it aired as a Twilight Zone episode, and it got the show back under budget, and as you mentioned, it then went on to win an Oscar for Best Short Subject. So the Twilight Zone won two Emmys as Best Series, and then this episode won an Oscar.
It was a very powerful show, but as Mark says, it was a monetary thing that made them do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Mark, if you were working with Rod Serling today as a writer, what do you think you'd be learning from him today?
Oh, my God. He was just, you know, it's funny. Recently someone said to me, if you could spend some time with Rod now, what would you ask? And I said to them, I think anything he said, I wouldn't be asking questions. I would just be listening to him. And I'm sure everything he said would be a lesson in itself. He just had such an astonishing wisdom, sense of humor, creative enthusiasm. You know, a moment ago when Carol was talking about what would Rod think of the world and of television now and media now, you know, I think if he were working in the medium now, he'd be writing for venues like AMC or HBO. He'd be writing, you know, now you have networks that encourage a free expression of the art form, and that was what Rod was trying to create, you know, with Twilight Zone. That was why he was having such a difficult time with the networks back then, because there were only three networks and there was considerable censorship. So I think Rod would be just this astonishing talent to have now as well.
Carol, did he ever have writer's block? Did he ever come home, or he was home out there in the pool writing? Did he ever say, I can't do this today?
Not often, George. That isn't something I really remember. I mean, he'd put it aside maybe, and work on something else. But he just had this fabulous imagination and this fabulous ability to write. He used to say it's the only thing he could do. I mean, he couldn't be a carpenter and he couldn't be a a radio disc jockey or something. All he knew how to do was to write.
I was going to say, what was he like around the house if something had to get fixed?
Not great.
Next up, let's go to Fritz in Binghamton, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Fritz, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, folks.
Morning.
I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I moved to Binghamton about a year and a half ago, and I bought a television last summer. And I think since July, I haven't missed an episode, because up here in Binghamton, where Rod was born and raised, I didn't realize he was from here. And I watched him back in the 60s when I was a little kid. And I just get so much out of it. I watch him every morning, and sometimes they have hour ones in the afternoon. And the attention to detail was remarkable. I watched an episode, I think it was a day or two ago, where a ladder, just a little thing like that, was in the exact same place it should have been like three scenes before. And it's just fantastic. And I never knew that Mr. Serling was from Binghamton until I moved to Binghamton and I saw his stuff. And I missed his the 50th anniversary last year. They had it at the theater down here, and I missed it, but I never miss an episode. 10 o'clock every morning on the local public television broadcasting up here, my face is plastered, and I'll tell you what, it's just phenomenal. And with the actors that I've seen, today I watched one with Holly Morris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I Dream of Jeannie. It's one of the hour-long episodes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I watched it this afternoon. And like, you know, and I remember television. I grew up with television, and I see these people, the people that he actually was a springboard, and William Shatner, of course, but there's so many others. Michael Constantine, I noticed, and even Goober,
Robert Redford.
Robert Redford. Yeah. But I was surprised to see Goober in one, the guy that went on to play Goober in the Andy and Mayberry thing.
Right. That's mm-hmm. like George Lindsay, that's right. Yeah,
George Lindsay. I couldn't remember his last name.
Amazing talent pool. You bet.
What was your favorite episode, Fritz, so far?
Oh, gee. Oh, that's like asking, like, you know.
They're all great. It's like saying, what's your favorite kid, you know?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, you know? But like I said, I didn't realize until I moved to Binghamton about a year and a half ago or so that he was from here until I saw, like, in front of Binghamton High School, they have a plaque out in front.
Wow.
And down on Court Street, they have the Midtown Plaza. They have a little plaque on the sidewalk with his star on it.
Well, was he raised there, Carol, or was he born in Syracuse, New York?
He was born in Syracuse, but he moved to Binghamton when he was just a few months old, and he really did grow up there. And Binghamton loved him.
And then he ended up back in Rochester, New York. That's where he passed away. Did you move out there, or how'd you get back there?
No, we had a summer home near Ithaca, New York, and that's
okay.
We were there.
All right, very good. Fritz, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. And let's go to our wild card. Steven in Georgia, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Steven.
Good evening, George. How you doing, sir?
Good, great.
This is such a great show. Look here, I started watching The Twilight Zone with my dad. And Mark, help me with this. It debuted at 10 o'clock on Friday nights. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, because my dad owned a grocery store, and I'd always work with my dad on Friday, and we'd always hurry home and get in front of the black and white Philco that we had and watch that show. Carol, you sound like you've been to Jacksonville, Florida, and got the Fountain of Youth. You seem like you've drank out of the Fountain of Youth. You sound so great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, look here. I know you ain't got a lot of time. Look here. My favorite episode, it was The Serve Man.
Yeah. Yeah,
I got to meet Richard Kiel in 1974. I was working for the Burt Reynolds Production Company that did The Longest Yard in at the Reachable Prison here in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet him, and I swear, back then, you could put two of my hands in one of his hands.
Wow.
It was such a wonderful experience, me meeting him. And I think the man's still alive, if I'm not mistaken.
He is. And as you mentioned, he played all of the alien roles in To Serve Man.
And what was it, the Canemits?
Yeah, the Canemits. That's right, exactly. And it's a classic. It really holds up.
Well, I bought the DVD set here about whenever it became available. I bought it in Best Buy, and when nothing's on TV out of the 7,000 channels you have now, you know, you wind up putting the DVD in of the twilight.
And there's nothing like it. Stephen, thanks for the call. The Blu-ray set, Mark, that you have put together is absolutely stunning. Has taken the old gray Twilight Zones, the black and whites, you've enhanced them. They look phenomenal.
I know. They were remastered in HD. They look gorgeous. It's so funny because back, you know, when they were in syndication originally, they would show these scratchy 16-millimeter prints with, you know, and you just got used to that. But now they're pristine. They're gorgeous. When Carol was talking about the black and white photography that George Clemens did as director of photography on Twilight Zone, you can really see it on those Blu-rays, and it's staggering. It's just gorgeous.
Carol, we've only got about a minute or so left with you. What major issue, you were married to Rod, you spent so many years with him. If there was one issue that really affected his gut, his inner emotions, what do you think that might have been? The story, the event, maybe a JFK assassination, whatever it might have been. What do you think touched him the most?
Well, certainly the JFK. In fact, he was called to Washington to write a documentary about LBJ as the funeral for Kennedy was going on. He was sitting up there writing this because nobody knew who Lyndon Johnson was overseas. So they had to have this documentary so that the rest of the world could figure out who this new president would be. Yes, that was a very touching, awful, terrible moment.
Well, Carol, thank you so much. And when I get out to L.A., maybe Mark can grab me and we can get together. I'd like to meet you, okay? Carol Serling, wife of the late Rod Serling. Mark will stay with us. We'll talk about some sci-fi related stories and take more of your calls later on in the hour on Coast to Coast AM.